How's it going? Hope you are having a great day, and thank you for checking in. Another wonderful story for you today. The folks involved with the Challenged Athletes Foundation. It's a group whose goal is to provide people with the tools they need to pursue active and healthy lifestyles, advocating for all levels of physical activity as a way to enhance quality of life for all. And in this group, Colonel Greg Gadsden, an inspirational story who lost both his legs serving our country. He's a man who has two Super Bowl rings, working with the New York Giants, also acted in a feature film, and is an inspiration to folks all over the world, now involved with the Challenged Athletes Foundation. Without further ado, let's bring him on. Great guy. Here's the Colonel, Greg Gadsden. What's the best way that I should address you with respect? I mean, if you're not in the service, are you like a president where you're always going to be colonel, or can I call you Greg? You know, how do I do it and be respectful and have rapport with you?
Whatever you want to call me is fine. I mean, just don't call me late for dinner.
Promise. You got a deal. All right. Hey, how did you get hooked up with CAF? I know that you've got a great story. We'll get into that, but this is such a great cause and a great group of folks.
So, I'm assuming you knew I was wounded about 12 years ago, and as I was recovering and putting my legs back together and getting on prosthetics, I started out with using an Oser product, and my prosthetist connected me with the Oser family, because I was actually testing a set of their bionic legs or powered prosthetics. And so because of my relationship with Oser, that made the connection to Challenged Athletes Foundation through Tabby King, and that's where it was born.
We'll get the folks caught up on your story, and it's pretty amazing. You were wounded serving our country in the Middle East. You lost both your legs. Hey, I wanted to ask you, did you ever at one point, I mean, I know you're so positive and such a great leader and inspirational person now, but after that happens and you don't have two of your limbs, ever kind of a why me, or even at least a little bit of mourning?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, sir. I would never want anyone to think that it was a piece of cake. I certainly went through, the emotional ups and downs of trying to, sort this out. And ultimately, I'll be honest with you, ultimately what allowed me to kind of process it and move it and truly accept it was my faith, because that's the only thing that in my world that can explain this and really allow me to be alive. I consider myself really blessed to survive a pretty horrific attack. And so I'm going to approach it as the glass is half full. But it's not a straight line. It's a course or a journey with a lot of turns and bends and ups and downs.
Just read a chapter about that. We're supposed to rejoice in our troubles, right? That's part of the deal, part of the walk.
Right. Well, and you know what? If you never have any bad times, then how do you know you have good times?
Greg, what do you remember about that incident? I mean, did you know when the vehicle explodes and, you know, you're lying there that your legs are gone? Are you conscious? Are you knocked out? You know, what was that experience like for you?
Well, I do remember it. I remember it because it stands out. First of all, was I was actually leaving memorial service for two soldiers in a sister battalion from Fort Riley that had been killed 3 days earlier. And I remember my heart was very heavy, and I was having some trouble really dealing with it, just, having a chance to slow down enough and acknowledge this sacrifice and what their families might have kind of gone through. And I was just running that through my head when my vehicle had been hit. And it's like a slow motion event. I can remember, I knew immediately it was an explosion, and I was ejected from the vehicle, and I remember hitting the ground and coming to a rolling stop on my back. Now, I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I knew I was seriously hurt and I couldn't move. And I said, God, I don't want to die here. I lost consciousness. I was fortunate that my teammates, like First Sergeant Frederick Johnson, who was the first to get to my vehicle after it stopped and realized that I was missing, he found me nearly 120 meters from where my vehicle came to a stop, began to resuscitate me, and one of my soldiers got the tourniquets on my legs. Just to summarize, I didn't lose my legs right away. I got to Walter Reed on the 11th of May, and about a week later, they had to take one of my, amputate my left leg above the knee to save my life. The next day, I almost lost my right leg, but they pulled a vein from my left bicep, and they were able to save my right leg. Ultimately, I made the decision for them to amputate my right leg because it wasn't going to function as it was intended, and I really felt that my quality of life would be better on without it. So really, just accepting this allowed me to move forward and make that decision to amputate my right leg.
How long did it take you before you got to that point of acceptance and, hey, I'm going to make a difference in the world and make this a good thing?
Well, I think that's really kind of an evolution. I don't know that I can say there was this point of, okay, I'm going to do great things. I hit my low point probably about 3 months after the attack. And, what I described as this moment when I just said, I can't take this anymore. I quit. I remember crawling up in a corner in my room and just, really pushing away my family, rejecting my family. And I just didn't want to be a burden on anyone. And I think that's the other part that you find out about yourself. And one of the things that I really emphasize with people is that, you live your life and you build your character of who you are every day. And you have a chance to add to it or improve it or not every day you're in life. And so for me, when I reached that moment when I tried to quit, it just wasn't me, and I couldn't do it. I said, fuck it. And I just said, I'm just going to live the day and make the most of every day. And I'm not going to worry about the future. I'm just going to get through the day. And so, and that's where I try to stay. Honestly, I know that one day I won't have a tomorrow. So I'm not going to, I don't want to say I'm not living like I'm scorching the earth, but I just want to stay present. I have a personal motto is to stay present, be your best, be my best, and be at peace. And that's all I can do, and that allows me to accept whatever happens.
Who were the people that were there for you when you were bottoming out, and how did they help you turn things around?
Well, my family, my wife and my kids, their unconditional love ultimately allowed me not to, wonder how my life was somehow different with respect to theirs. And so that was absolutely rock solid. My friends, and I should have started with, it's really all about my faith. God made us a promise that he said he would never give us more than we can handle. And if you take that on faith, if you take that journey with him and you accept that no matter how bad this is, he already told me that I can handle it. And so guess what? I had to handle it. And I trusted that I would, one day at a time.
What made you think of reconnecting with Mike Sullivan after all those years when he was coaching with the Giants?
Well, Mike, like many of my classmates and many of my teammates, they came to my aid. And Mike came to visit me in the hospital when I was still an inpatient. And so, ironically, the third game of their 07 season was in Washington, D.C., and that's when he reached out to me and asked me if I'd be willing to address the team.
What do you recall about that speech with that 0-2 squad that ended up turning things around in a big way?
Well, I've shared much of what I've shared with you today. But at that point in my life, as much as I was talking to them, I was probably talking to myself, quite honestly. And really just really emphasizing in life that, there are no guarantees. You got to leave it on the line. You got to play for each other. You're not playing for the, I mean, the fans matter and all that, but this is about being your best and about putting the work in and put it all on the line.
And it certainly would make someone dealing with an ankle injury or maybe a click within the team, you know, puts all that in perspective when they look at what your life has been about.
Yeah, and I just remember like one little quick story from that, like after the speech. So I didn't know these guys from Adam. I mean, I literally, only two people knew I was speaking to the team. That was Mike and Coach Coughlin. And, later on the next day, Plexico Burris had been questionable or they weren't even sure he was going to play. And he was in and he played the rest of the season, for a receiver. He had some ankle issues and knee issues, and he didn't complain anymore.
You were part of the playoff run, too. I remember the story about you being at Lambeau Field, and you could have been up in a luxury box, living life and still being a nice role model support guy, but you were down in the trenches, so to speak, with your guys. Why?
The rest of the background on that is that I had been in the hospital after the first playoff game against Tampa. I had to go back in the hospital for surgery on my right arm and surgery on my right leg. And so I missed the Dallas game, and I got out of the hospital on the Thursday before the NFC Championship game in Lambeau Field. And, I wasn't trying to be noble or anything. I watched the games on the sideline. Just because it's 33 below zero doesn't mean that I want to go and get out of the weather. So I stayed there.
What was the hottest temperature you dealt with in the Middle East and then compared to the coldest that you've been in?
I think I can safely say I've seen about 130 to 135.
Jeez.
In Baghdad, Saudi Arabia. That was in the first Gulf War as well. Lambeau Field is probably cold, although I've been up in the skiing in Breckenridge, Colorado, and I think I've seen minus 60 with the wind chill up on the mountain.
But you weren't doing shirt sleeves or going with your arms exposed like you were at Lambeau.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah.
I didn't do that either in the Green Bay game. I had a coat on. It is a little funny story. I actually went out for the warm-ups, and I had a jacket on, but I didn't have any I just had, like, regular shorts on like I have them on now. And I was like, I got back in the locker room, and the ends of my stumps were, like, numb. I'm like, I got to get some pants on. So I did bring some – I had some other pants, so I got them on. I wasn't going to go out there. I would not have made it.
Okay, you're a role model with some sense then.
Oh, yeah. Got to live to fight another day.
Hey, before the Super Bowl, and they beat a team that had not lost a game, they beat the Patriots, and you told the guys, if I was going to battle, because you wanted to be any place in the world you'd be with your guys, serving again, if I was going to battle, I'd take every one of you with me.
Well, it was very emotional. That was that Saturday before the Super Bowl. That was the first practice I went to. And on the way back from practice, I was sitting next to Coach Coughlin, and I said, Coach, I would like to address the team if you would let me. And he said, sure. And, even thinking about it now, it's still emotional because I felt like I carried a lot of guilt. I mean, I know I got wounded, but I just felt so awkward not being back with my soldiers. And I told them that. I said, look, if I could be anywhere in the world right now, it would be back with my soldiers in Iraq. But I said, but I'm proud to say that I'm part of this team, and I've seen you guys become a team, and I would take every one of you with me.
Yeah, certainly helped push that team over the top. And they also won it in 2012 with another win over the Patriots. So you've got to be the only bilateral above-the-knee amputee with two Super Bowl rings.
Yeah, I probably probably the only bilateral above the knee amputee with a couple of with several things. But
yeah, that's pretty amazing. You've said, Colonel, that I opened my life to others. That was cathartic and helping myself at the time. But now it's flipped around. Really, it's not about what we put into it. It's what I can give to other people.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I'm 53 years old, and I'm not saying all my better days are behind me, but I just feel like this is a point in my life where I really get to give back. I mean, I can talk to military units, and I'll have to worry about what I say because I'm retired now. And I can speak truth to power, and in some cases be a little bit more frank and candid than I could have been when I was in uniform. And not that's negative. It's just that I'm in a different place in life.
Now, Colonel, you obviously inspire so many people. Who in the world inspires you?
Well, my family, my wife of almost 30 years, my parents who passed. I've had mentors, Major General retired Rodney Anderson. What I've learned is that I just have to be the best that I can be. That's what I own. That's what I control. And our journey on this planet is Earth is short. And so let's just make the most of it. There are people that are important to me in my life, but that's not why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm doing it because that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what I believe I'm supposed to do.
Did you ever think when you're sitting in the hospital at Walter Reed and you're wondering if you're going to even live, that eventually, a dozen years down the line, you'd be making such an impact with so many folks around the world?
Not at all. That was the furthest thing from my mind. But, something my dad said to me when I was in the hospital is he said, son, they tried to kill you. And, you were in charge of 400 soldiers and he says, now look how strong you're going to be. I mean, maybe he saw it well before I did, that I was going to be able to touch more lives than I did before I was injured.
You use a lot of your phrasing that does definitely relate to sports and your background playing at Army. And I know a lot of people will use those cliches, the playing in sports helps build character and helps you become the person you're going to be. Do you feel like there are lessons that you have from sports that helped you in the military and in life after?
Yes, sir. 100%. And because the effort you put in sports to me is kind of transparent to how you live your life. I'm not one to believe you have an A or B switch or A or B game. Again, if you're living up to the best you can in everything that you do, I mean, as a student athlete, it's not just on the ball field, but in the classroom. And, I wish I could say I had all those lessons learned because, if you look at my transcripts, you would say you probably wonder what my effort was there. But let's just say I survived West Point and I graduated on time. But to me, things like commitment, I share with athletes all the time that commitment is blind. And so when you're committed to an effort, when you're committed to a cause, it doesn't matter whether bullets are flying, it doesn't matter whether life is at stake. When you're committed to something, you'll do what it takes to be successful. And that's where I think it is. The experiences are the same. The attitude, the approach of being dedicated and being professional and putting the work in.
How much of being a team is creating that family?
That's 100% of it. I mean, it is. It's guys that buy into the same plan and they're not going through the motions. They're not looking for shortcuts, but they are putting in a legitimate commitment. I mean, like, one of the things I didn't truthfully enjoy when I played football was lifting weights. And I remember as I got more senior, I actually just kind of turned it in and I used it to visualize actions that I would be doing on the field. So I turned it in something to, and I made it a positive, and I made it work for me. And, you know, I was a 195-pound outside linebacker playing Division I football. And, you know, I like to say I held up my end of the bargain. So it was because I didn't have a margin of error. I wasn't super fast or super strong or throwing people around. So I had to do everything right.
Is that true that Herschel Walker never lifted weights? He just did push-ups and sit-ups?
Yep. I've heard it from him. I know him, and that's. But he did a lot of them. I mean, like thousands a day. Oh yeah. I mean, he's over 50 years old, and he can still outrun a lot of current NFL players.
I'm looking at the list of athletes that are involved in your organization. Ella Rodriguez, born with a club foot, who surfs, plays basketball, track and field. Scout Bassett, who lost a leg in a fire and has gone on to win a medal at the World Championships in track and field. Tony Lee, losing a foot, having it bitten off by a shark. I mean, you're working with some folks that have been through an awful lot and bringing a real positive message, keeping hope alive for a lot of folks.
Yes, and it's great to recognize those that have had significant injury and gone on to achieve greatness in sport. But just as much as we recognize those, it's the ones that we don't see every day that are just trying to make the most of their lives and enjoy what all Americans have a chance to do. And that's why this is so important so that access to sports equipment is not an impediment to them achieving all that they can be.
And you prefer using the term challenged rather than disabled. That's more empowering, I guess, right?
Oh, absolutely. And quite honestly, David, we're all got challenges. Every single person on this planet has got a challenge. Some are more visible than others, but we're all challenged. But I agree. I don't feel disabled. Look, I get up every day. I go to work, I put my pants on like you, or maybe not exactly like you, but, I drive to work. And so if I do all those things that you do with less, then how am I disabled? You know, it's not about anybody else's challenges except yours. That's the only fight you can fight is your own. I don't want to compare my life. I don't let people compare their lives to me. I said, you know, you have your life. You have your set of challenges and you have it. You know, let us share how we approach, but let us not compare because it's not about comparing.
Are you going to act again?
We'll see. We'll see, honestly. I don't know. I didn't know I was ever going to act. That wasn't on my list.
What a blessing, though. I mean, you were in Battleship working with Brooklyn Decker trying to save the world. How did you get hooked up with Peter Berg and getting a role in the film like that?
Well, Peter is, from New York. And I don't know if you caught, but I was wearing a New York Giants hat.
Yes.
And so, really, my relationship with the New York Giants is, Pete looked me up. I mean, I got a cold call in the middle of the day when I was in a war college, and he asked me if I'd be in this movie. And so going back to that thing, I'm just going to take on the world, and I'm not going to say no, I didn't.
How did you prep for that role?
OJT. I mean, there was no prep.
Yeah.
Honestly, the first time I read the script was when I was flying to Hawaii.
Were you nervous on set?
No, I've played as a college athlete in front of thousands. I've been to combat. So that part didn't really make me nervous. I was most concerned about whether I was going to be flubbing my lines more than anything. So that was more internal.
What do you recall about the scene when I guess you're walking across some stage, ready to approach Liam Neeson and you fell?
Yeah. So that didn't make the film, but I mean it was a long day of filming, and it was toward the end of the day, and you know I probably got up for the eighth or ninth time out of my chair to walk up to the stage, and I had to go over this curb, and I tripped, and it snapped my prosthetic from my leg, and so this is in front of over 1,000 extras, and they're like, and people come run over to me, and I'm like, oh, I was more embarrassed than anything. I was just like, because everybody thinks that I'm hurt, and I'm like, no, that's my leg just came apart, so anyway.
Because Peter Berg, I guess, you know, asked you how you're doing, and I think your quote was something like, shit happens.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I told him. I'm like, and I remember I was apologizing because I knew they couldn't do that. That's the end of that scene. I'm not getting up. So after that, though, they had a prosthetic repairman or a prosthetist. They had a prosthetist on set with me the rest of the time.
Was there anything about that movie-making process that, you know, surprised you? Or what did you learn from that you didn't expect going in?
Well, I first of all have a huge respect for the professional actors. It is not easy, and I think going in I was just really concerned about whether I was going to be able to learn my lines and how long it was going to take, because I was like, I'm a dummy, but it's really the emotional involvement. It's a character, and it's not you. And you've got to be able to transform yourself into this character. And that part was, that's the part that I gained huge respect for. I mean, it's almost like you have to learn how to become a different person. And so when you see great acting, when you see somebody that just captures you on film, it's because they become that individual.
Well, how did you learn that then? You said, you know, on the job training, you get there, was there some coach that helped you get into character? Because I know it's got to be more than just remembering the lines. You have to, you know what's happening and tell the story.
I had an acting coach, but I had no prep. I mean, it was just kind of like, here's your acting coach. And so in the mornings, we would talk about what we're going to film today. And I'm like, and so I, you know, eventually I was able to kind of, you know, I get, his name was Mike. I get in the trailer, we get ready in the morning. I go, all right, Mike, where's Mick at today? You know. Like where emotionally is he at, you know? And what happened was I had a fairly minor role, and I was exceeding their expectations. So they started expanding my role. So I couldn't even study my lines at night because they were rewriting them overnight. I had new lines every morning when I got to the trailer.
That's gotta be flattering. Like you go in there with this little role you have in mind and they expand it. Yeah, it's got to give you a little extra confidence as an actor, right?
Well, it's funny because after going through the experience, now I kind of realize I don't know a whole lot about it. So I'm a little bit uncomfortable calling myself an actor. I did in 15 do one season of a family series on called The Inspectors. And I did like 10 episodes of that. So, but it's one of those things, like, I don't have an agent and I don't, you know, cause I don't want anybody looking for something for me. If it comes up again, then it works out timing wise. Cause I have a pretty, pretty aggressive schedule and so, you know, there's tons of people out there. I mean, if it happens again, I'll jump into it. But you know, if it doesn't, it's not anything I'll be disappointed about.
There's a lot of sitting around and waiting though, right? That makes it hard to maintain the character when you're moving cameras around and doing this and that, then you'll come back an hour later, to always be on.
Well, very on in the filming, that was hard. I mean, like I really, you know, like, my acting coach wouldn't let anybody talk to me, like when they were resetting the cameras and everything, because he didn't want me out of character. But you know, a couple of months into it, I was able to smoke and joke and then get back into character. So, so I did see, and that was kind of my personal kind of, hey, I can do this. I mean, I can, you know, I went from like, leave him alone to, okay, I can handle it. So,
yeah, I could see you auditioning against Mahershala Ali and whooping his ass for a role.
Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Hey, Colonel, I mean, I'm looking at the stuff that you've done in your life. You served in Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Operation Joint Forge, Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom. And I bug out when I slam my toe against the bedpost and I see what you've done in your life. It almost, you know, embarrasses me to ever complain about any pain I have. I thank you for your service, and it's a real blessing to get to talk to you.
Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate the interview. You know, sometimes, as you know, people don't do their homework and are asking me like these, you know, basic questions, and I'm just like, this was a fun interview. You really made it enjoyable, and I appreciate that.
Oh, thanks a lot, Colonel. Hey, what's Mike Sullivan doing now? I know he coached for Denver last year, and they blew out the staff. So, with Vic Fangio, so he was, you know, out of that position.
Right. So right now he is. I'm pretty sure he's not been picked up by any team right now. And I know one time when he had a year off, he was. He'll get involved with working with college quarterbacks. Getting them ready to for the combine, getting them ready to try to be professional quarterbacks. He's a great quarterback mentor.
You're the man. I don't want this to be the last time we ever speak. Is that all right?
Oh, absolutely, David. Absolutely.
Super cool. Laura Wolfstein is the marketing director of the Challenged Athletes Foundation with more on what we're doing.
We're raising money to fund adaptive sports equipment in the Bay Area and beyond. So your listeners can always go to donatecaf.com if they want to support the cause. ChallengeAthletes.org, you can learn about all of our events around the country. You can also learn about the cause and where the money goes. But, you know, the most important thing is to provide funding. So our funding goes to individuals. So March 26th, we're going to be sending out our 2019 grants across 95 different sports to individuals around the world.
So, David, I'm a former soldier, and so, you know, in many cases, the VA or even the Department of Defense has provided me some equipment like a hand cycle. That's how I cycle. That's one thing I've picked up that I didn't really seriously do before I was wounded. And for instance, last year I had had several bike rides that were over 60 miles. One of them was 82 miles in one day and 120 over 2 days. I mono ski, I scuba dive, and I skydive. So I'm continuing to be a challenge athlete.
What is it on your to-do list that you haven't done yet? I mean, you've got stuff off my checklist that I haven't got to yet. What about for you? You're living the life to the max.
Well, I think it's a lot. Just travel and, you know, just go places that are neat to see. I mean, I've been on the Great Wall of China. I've been to the Pantheon and Parthenon in Greece. And so just I haven't been to Egypt yet. I like to go out there and dive in the Red Sea. I'm a curious individual and as much as I want to give back, I also want to experience as well.
I saw the one little video clip of you bouncing around kind of like Forrest Gump, you know, with all the celebrities, with President Bush and Jay Leno. Who was it that you've met during this journey that maybe you were kind of blown away, like, I can't believe I'm talking to him or her?
I think one I'd say is Colin Powell. I was on a Jay Leno show with him, but I actually met him before that. Prince Harry was kind of cool. I wanted to meet, I was very close, and unfortunately I didn't, was Muhammad Ali. That would have probably, wow. He was on the top of my list, and I really I mean, I can't regret not seeing him, but I wish I got to meet him before he passed.
Thanks to Colonel Greg Gadson and Laura Wolfstein for sharing the story of the Challenge Athletes Foundation, and you can get involved, challengeathletes.org. The executive producer of the podcast is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe via iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. Your feedback really makes a difference. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. We'll be right back.